wrote this book, The King of David, and he opens in chapter 1 and verse 2, where he says, all is vanity, vanity of vanities. Now, we often think the word vain is meaning someone thinks they're all that. They think too much of themselves. Remember the song, Siley Carmen, You're So Vain? Ann sings that to me often. No, she doesn't. But vanity means here what? Not empty, worthless, a waste of time. And actually, it translates best empty or void. So in other words, it's like that present that's a big box, and you open it up, and there's nothing in it. Or you ever had one of those? Or else there's a box in the box in the box in the box, and the last little box says, gotcha, you know. Well, that's a vain or empty present. And so then he asks this question, what advantages man have under the sun? And that's really the big question, is when you look at our life on this earth, and he looks at it as under the sun. Of course, we know we're talking about life on this earth as if there is no God. Now, is Solomon saying there is no God? No, because he uses God's name repetitively throughout this book, and he ends with an appeal to fear God. But he's saying, if you want to just get your life straight and have the right perspective, we have to look at life as though there is no God and see if there's any purpose, if there is any meaning. Can you be happy without God? And so that's the question he's asked. When you look at all your work, all your activities, when it's all said and done, was it worth it? Did you waste your time? Did you accomplish anything? Was it worth it? Now, that's the question, and the answer is your theme verse that I'd like you to memorize when he gets to verse 11, and he says, I considered all my activities. Now, what qualified Solomon to make this grand test of looking for meaning or purpose in life? There's like three or four factors. First of all, what? Wealth. He had wealth. He had what? He had the opportunity because he had all the time because he was what?
King.
He had authority. And then the fourth thing?
Wisdom.
He was able to evaluate things. He had wisdom more than anyone else. So he's extremely wealthy. He had all the authority. No one could say no to him. He could do anything his heart's content. And he had the wisdom to evaluate things. And he says, when I looked at it all done, all the labor which I exerted, that's their energy, your breath of life, behold, it was all vanity. It was empty. There's no profit, he says. Now, that's pretty despairing, isn't it? Now, if you just finished it, said, I'm not reading any more of this book, you would miss the whole point. But you have to open up to realize that if you're looking for purpose and meaning and happiness just in this world, as if there is no God, that's going to be the ultimate outcome. And so there's where we're going. The word hebel is that word vanity, and it means brief, absurd, meaningless, 35 times in 29 verses. Now, what we're going to look at this morning is this, what amounts to is a prologue. And a prologue is just like an introduction to a book or a thesis or something like that. And he's just describing a lot of things that's going to back up his contention that there is no prophet under the sun. He's going to make some general observations and statements, and he's not asking you to agree with them, but he's just saying, here's what I found, and this is what I'm going to prove. And so the proof's going to come later when he does his test, but these are going to be his observations right up front. And that's really good preaching. You tell people where you're going to go, show how you got there, and then in the end, repeat it. And then make some conclusions and applications. And that's exactly what he's going to do here. So let's look at verse 1 through 11, and we're going to look at why he says it's all vain. And again, this is really despairing, and you might want to argue with some of these things, but just try to listen to his voice as a man who's older now, and he's gone through his midlife crisis, if that's what it was. And he's come to his senses, and here's what he's learned. Verse 4, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Now, when you talk about a generation, what's he talking about? People.
People get born, people die.
All right, so you look at, here's a great-granddaughter, the mother, the grandmother, great-grandmother, all right? Would that daughter know who her great-grandmother is? Maybe by name, but will she really know anything about her? Her life, and her first boyfriend, her first kiss, her dreams and ambitions, where she lived, what she suffered, and all those things. No, because I don't know that about my great-grandma. Do you know that about yours? Honestly. Maybe a little, a lot?
A little bit.
A little bit, all right? Can you name her?
Yeah.
What? Betsy. Okay, on the other side?
No.
Oh, okay, no. But she is part of your lineage. You wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that great-grandma, isn't that right? Now, does anyone here can name both their great-grandmas? You can? Well, let's hear it. Ah, see, he says he could. It's, even though you probably could drudge up their name, it's just a faded memory, right? And that's going to be you and me on this earth, that when it's all said and done, no one's going to remember you are. And so the earth, though, just continues on. Like, you just were not even a thought. You're just a blip. I like what Kevin did when he drew that timeline and how long is our timeline if you want to have eternity. Where does it go? Just forever. And then he says, your lifespan on this earth is smaller than a pinprick. It's just a little dot, and that dot's too big, isn't it? And that's what he says. So it leads you to realize your life's really insignificant. Not only will they won't remember who you are, they don't care. No one really cares. So, well, yeah, they care. No, they don't. They don't care because they don't choose to remember. You say, well, that's depressing. Well, it is. Verse 5, also the sun rises and the sun sets, and it hastens to its place right and rises there again. So first, scientifically, do we know the sun rises in the east and then sets in the west, correct? Does it run back to the east so it can rise again next morning? No, we know it doesn't do that. And the Bible's not being having an error here scientifically. But from our perspective, what does it look like? If you're a little child, you look at life, what? The sun rises and it sets over up. You wake up in the next morning, where's the sun again? It's back over there. And what does it do? It rises and then it sets. And as you get older, the day just ends faster, doesn't it? It's like, where'd the whole day go? I'm convinced the reason a child, the days drag on forever. Aren't they long days? And if you're waiting for Christmas, it's forever, or your birthday, it's forever, because you have nothing to do except play and goof off. But as an adult, your life's so full of things and thoughts and responsibilities, and you're pulled all these different directions. You got so much going on in here, the clock just ticks the same speed, doesn't it? But you don't have enough time to get everything done. Wouldn't it be great to be a child again? Because what do you want to do now? I don't know, I'm bored. Oh boy, to be a child again and have that kind of opportunity. No responsibility, do whatever you want. That's what he's saying, that you look at it, life's just repetitive. Because you get up in the morning, you look, oh man, I got to get up again. Honestly, have you ever felt that way? You didn't want to get up and go to work. It's the same old, and it just repeats itself over and over and over until what? You die, and then no one remembers who you were. Oh, this is real fun, isn't it? Okay? So then we look at the next verse. He says, blowing towards the south. Now he's talking about the wind, verse 6. Then turning towards the north. The wind continues swirling along. On its circular courses, the wind returns. Now, again, I don't know how he knew this, but they knew, they have discovered wind cycles and they follow certain paths. And the wind does a return from which it came. And that's what he says here. And he's speaking about the wind to make an observation. And you can say, well, what's he trying to point out? Well, it's monotonous. It's like watching the same commercial over and over and over again. Isn't that why you hate commercials? Because you've seen them over and over again, and they just waste your time. Is that not life? Isn't it monotonous? You're doing the same thing over and over and over, and what are you going to do tomorrow? The same thing over again. All right, yes.
Well, the key word there that he's hitting on the main thing is life is circular.
It is.
The sunrise and sets because it keeps going around.
That's right.
There's no beginning. There's no end. It just keeps going. There's mathematical theories I won't bother you with about the wind.
Thank you.
Why the wind keeps circulating, and there's always a cyclone or something somewhere because of that circular.
That's right.
Circular wind, and just over.
If you didn't hear what he said, it's cyclical, the life on this earth. It's circular. It just keeps repeating itself. Is that true in your life? I mean, how many people got the flu this year already? One? I guess Dave Larson. Does he have the flu? Is that what I heard, Esther? Does Dave have the flu? Yeah. Is this the first time Dave ever had the flu in his life? You don't know, huh? You don't recall him ever having the flu before this?
No.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Has anyone ever had the flu twice in their life? That's right. And Paul, will you get it again probably?
I hope not. Linda's got it.
Oh, she has it? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. But what goes around, comes around, just keeps on happening. Good things too. But just taxes. It's tax time again, isn't it? Didn't we just do that? I mean, seriously. We just, huh? Oh. Well, that's why you sell those extension forms for people that are late here. But that's exactly what he's saying. So then he turns to the rivers. He says, here's another example that's cyclical. And it's very interesting. The rivers flow into the sea. The Columbia, mighty river, just flows into the Pacific Ocean. But here's his observation. Does the sea ever fill up? Well, no. Why doesn't it fill up? For a young child, is that a good question? If all these rivers, the Nile, the Amazon, the Columbia, the Mississippi, they flow to the oceans, the ocean should fill up and the river should go dry. Right? You can't run forever. And look what he... Why no? But here's the reason. Well, it's to the places where the rivers flow, they flow again. To the place where the rivers flow, they flow again. He's not talking about this condensation or evaporation and condensation and all this cycle, but that's the reason, isn't it? But he's just looking at observation. Can you imagine given a task in life and you never can accomplish your task? It never gets done, and you just work at it and work at it, and your job is never finished. What would that give you or lead you to?
Despair.
Well, despair, that's right. I'll call it futility. I mean, why am I doing this? It never gets done, all right?
The thing they would have thought of when reading this is the Jordan River and the Dead Sea.
Yes. Right. That or the Nile, because that was just south of them as well.
Yeah, this confined lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it never fills up.
That's right. But that's our life, you know. It just, every task, I mean, don't you just love weeding around the house? Weeding weeds, your garden and your beds. And we love weeding because as soon as you do it, you have to do it again. And again, if vegetables grew as well as weeds did, I would have the best garden there is. Isn't that true? But it doesn't matter what it is, you got to do it again. Brush your teeth. You comb your hair. Take a shower. When you're young, you say, why do I got to make the bed? Because I'm just going to mess it up again tonight, right? Everything is just unending, and it never accomplishes something, you know, that's permanent. Now, someone had their hand up. Yes. Laundry. I could say mothers understand this more than anyone because a lot of their task around the house, raising kids and adult husbands, it's just the same repetitive task. And is their job ever done? No. Is the house ever clean and stay clean? No. Are the dishes ever clean and always clean? No. I don't know. I mean, how many times Ann's told me or asked me, who tracked this mud in the house? I don't know why she asked, because she knows it was me. And why don't I ever learn? Because that it's that one time, oh, I got to get in there real quick, and I'll just get back out. And you go, oh, look at that, all right? Job's never done, is it? It's futile, okay? And that's what he's saying here. And like, Solomon, come on, is it really that bad? Well, yeah. Now, the next one he says, verse 9, he just comes out and says it. All things are wearisome. What does that word mean to you? Wearisome. Huh?
Makes you tired.
Okay, what else? A wearisome. It could be just a physical tiredness, but often in their emotional component with it. I'm just weary. I'm just tired of doing this physically, but that makes me emotionally tired. Why do this? It's just a waste of time, and no one appreciates what I'm doing anyway. Right? Yes. Oh, yeah. Teachers.
I'm not physically exhausted, but boy, by the end of the day, after mentally struggling with students, it's...
You're tired, yeah.
And I get up and do it the next day, and it doesn't seem to make a difference.
So he had one true confession. Can anyone else give me something that might make you weary? I'm not saying it has to. So, anybody? Yes. All right, if you didn't hear it, someone dealing with someone's repetitive mistakes. They never learn from it, and you have to deal with the consequences over and over. Is that wearisome? Right? Of course, the Lord says, be gracious and forgive. How many times? 7 times 70 if they repent. Yeah, but that can become very wearisome. Anybody else? What's something that makes weary your life weary?
Politics.
Is that the same old, same old? I mean, politics, I don't care who's in office. In the big, big picture, do a lot of things change? Not really. Yes?
I was thinking about that for your animal.
Okay. Isn't that interesting? It's such a simple thing. Why do we have a pet in the first place? To give us comfort and joy. But with that, what's the never-ending job? Is cleaning up. And if you don't, will you even be more weary? Right? It's a job that's never end. Wayne.
Well, unless you're my wife, you really like picking up the horse poop.
Yeah. Yeah. Anne likes washing dishes. Some things are therapeutic. I like mowing lawns. But is a lawn ever going to stop needing mowed? Stop
yes.
Needing mowing. When it's dead.
When you get rid of it.
That's the only reason. You know, that's when you go to Stonescape and stuff. Like, forget that. Well, there's what he's saying. Now, what he adds to it is this interesting. Clark says it's impossible to calculate how much anxiety, pain, labor, and fatigue are necessary in order to carry on the common operations of life. That's a big statement to say. There's a lot of energy to living, isn't there? There's a lot of energy required. Things you're handling, you know, as far as relationships and children. And I have to be honest, when the phone rings, I'm trying to gauge it in my mind. 10%, there's always something in the back of mind. Oh, no, what is it now? Is someone sick? What, did the kids get in an accident? Do you have the same feeling ever? You're just like, what is it now? But 95 times out of 10, it's a good call, right? It's just someone, but it's back there because you've had enough of it happen in your life. You know the next one's coming. And you just have to charge yourself up emotionally to deal with it. It's wearisome, isn't it? And so he says, but yet we have an endless desire of gain, an endless curiosity to witness a variety of results. And it causes us to labor on. Here's the paradox. It's tiring. It wipes you out, but you just can't stop. You just can't stop. You just want to try out the next thing. You want to try out something that's new and more exciting. And so it's wearisome, but there's this compulsiveness about living, isn't there? And they say, well, it's one of the things that God has put in it. It's the instinct of survival and to persevere and to better yourself. And that might all well be true, but it'll explain what we're dealing with here. It'll kill you, but you just can't stop. It's like eating chocolate. Well, no, that's a vitamin. I forgot. It's like, you know, all those bad comfort foods. You know, it'll kill you, but you just can't stop. And that's life. And the day you stop, what happens to you? generally. When you stop trying something and still working and pursuing and trying to accomplish, what happens to that person generally? They die. They get sick or something and they die. You see people when they give up their will to live, they die. And it doesn't have to be an older person. It can be a younger person that happens as well. And so it's natural, but it's never ending. And we've already seen it's futile because it never really accomplishes anything. Because neither is the eye satisfied with what they see. That's what's the old adage there? The grass is greener somewhere on the other side of the fence. Well, this is nice, but oh, look at that. And then it's never filled the ear with what it hears. Yes?
Jack, I'm convinced the reason why high amount of suicide today is because of this.
That's right. That's right. And we'll come back to that thought in just a second, because you're right. It used to be with cars. It's electronics. Some of you use it with guns. I'm just picking on the males. iPhone. How many people have iPhones? Who has the newest iPhone 10? Oh, there's the guy. You're never fulfilled with what you have. You have to have what? The next best, greatest thing. That's been me with electronics. When the first computers came out, and it was a 8088. You don't even know what that chip is, probably, an Intel. And it was just notoriously slow, but it was the biggest thing in the world. And then they went to that to a 286, then a 386, then and a Pentium D. And every time the new model come out, Ann can contest to it, what did Jack have to do? Get the newest, fastest chip, right? And now I have an i7, the latest model, but they've kind of stopped now, and so I'm stopped buying because, you know, it's fast enough. But has anyone ever got that? You're happy, excited, but, oh no, there's a better one. It's faster, it's better, and it's smoother, and it'll make life easier, right? And that's life with everything. I don't care if it's food or clothes or everything, whatever it is, we're never satisfied. And isn't that a weary treadmill to be on? And that's what we can think about is, I used to have a little squirrel, a chipmunk is what it was, that I caught by putting some food under a box, a cardboard box with a little stick to trip it. I mean, that's all the toys you had when you were a poor kid living in John Day. And I caught that little chipmunk and put him in a cage just like that with a hamster wheel. He would just run a zillion miles an hour, wake me up in the morning. And then, of course, he'd hang on and go, woo, spin around it. It was so much fun, all right, to watch him. But isn't that life for all of us? I mean, you just work, 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 and where do you end up? In the same place. And sometimes we go for a ride, woo, you know, that was exciting. But when you get off, where are you? You're right where you started. One day he got out. I think it's because my brother left the door open. And I was kind of brokenhearted because he's my little friend, you know. I don't think I named him. Maybe I did. But he's gone. Of course, now he's in the house, too. And I went to bed with the door open, and what did I hear in the morning? He was back in because that's where he was placed. You know, he just went back to where he started from. See? Life was even wearisome for him. Notice what he goes on to say in verse 9. That which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. And this is like going to be a summary statement in this section right here when he says there's nothing new under the sun. Because it's the first time in this section he's mentioned life under the sun again. But this is, it's really profound, and it's something you have to think about. That which has been, that's looking in the past, is that which will happen in the future. And that which happens in the future is that which will be done. No, that which has been done is that which will be done. He's just saying it the same way. So what he's trying to say is, the last statement, there's nothing new under the sun. Now, at first blush, you might go, no, that's not true. They never had the technology we have today 100 years ago. True or not true? It's true, but all the emotions and energy that is associated with the new technology they had back then is exactly the same today. Can you imagine the first telephone? And you didn't dial, and it wasn't push or tone, you know. You would just pick it up and click, 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 and you get an operator, right? And the operator said, I gotta help you. And they connect you to someone, and you connect by name, right? Can you reach me, Glenn? You know, oh yeah, I'll put you on. Glenn, hang on, Jack wants to talk to you. And we would marvel, I imagine they did, that you could hear someone's voice coming through this stupid speaker. Wasn't it the most amazing technology in their day? Can you imagine the talk of the town when, guess what? Glenn actually got a phone in his house. I mean, that was big time living, right? I know when Ann, she remembers fondly the day her dad brought home a TV, a Keller TV, excuse me. Still talks about it. I mean, TV's exciting, but bring home a Keller one? Think of all the associated emotions and excitement. Now it's big screen, LCD, OLED, but is it still the same? Is there anything really new? Politics, is there anything new? I mean, how many kings have been assassinated over the years? We read about in the Bible. How many wars have been run over romance or religion? Or fought over romance or religion? It's just, is there anything new? Adultery, is that a new phenomenon? How about drugs? Is that new? You know, immorality is not new. Drugs is not new. How about covetousness? People just want to get more and more than they really ever need. Is that new? There's nothing new, but we think it's new to us. Yes.
You mentioned the TV as a story my dad told about when they first, under Grandpa Virgil, and that first came in. And
yes.
The attention they gave to it until Grandpa got upset with them and told them to go do their chores. But
yeah, yeah. We were talking about sports, Dana and I, and the Super Bowl's coming up. Is sports new?
No.
I mean, they had Olympic Games. And back before that, they had just races. Solomon had chariots. He had the new, latest, greatest chariot from Egypt. We read that last week, right? And now it's just like us getting the newest, greatest car. And there's nothing new under the sun because it has the same emotions and energy attached with it. It's the same thing. It's just better technology or different forms. The coolest. And so when you look at that, life can become boring. Boring because it's not new. We've been here. And it's uninspiring. And we're going to give the secret later, Solomon will, how to enjoy things as they come your way. But he's trying to paint the picture that if you put your purpose and your value and meaning in these things, it's going to be unfulfilling. Because everything you acquire, everything you do, there's nothing new. It's all the same, and it's all repetitive. And if that's where your focus is, you're going to be really disappointed. But if we look above the sun, we're going to finally be able to truly enjoy these things for what they are, because we have nothing invested in them emotionally or spiritually. So when they come our way, great. And when they leave, that's fine too, because we live life above the sun. That's where we're going to go. But you have to see the picture of how vain this is, or we won't detach ourselves from them. You with me? We're so attached to stuff and life under the sun because we think that's all there is. Even though as Christians, we acknowledge, no, there's more than that. But that's our challenge here. The Athenians, and when Paul was in Athens, he went there, and it says the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. It was the pursuit of philosophy. But what's the basis for this whole attitude? They're bored with life. They want something new, something exciting. So people come in town, if you could tell us something new, boy, we'll listen. We think we've heard it all. And that's what they're looking for. Kidner writes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Is that not true? And in their new guise, the old ways go on as a race we've never learned. And so he goes on to say, is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new? Now, can anyone, that's a challenge. Can you throw some up that's new to our society, our culture, that no other generation's seen? All right, he said the possibility of going to Mars. So how would we make that, going to the moon, let's say in 1969 when Kennedy said we're going to go to the moon, they did. Was that new? New in its technology and its destination, but how about when they sailed the ocean blue to discover India, but landed in what we now know as North America? Was that the same excitement of venture and thrill and wonder if they're ever going to come back alive? And it took technology. They did get lost. And when they saw the Native Americans, they called them what? Indians, because they thought they were in India. You know, a little off course, right? So is there anything new? Was that really the same old, but just different destination? All right, someone else had something. What? Art. Well, that's a good observation. How many elements in the periodic chart of elements? I don't remember. Huh? No one remembers? Come on, you science.
They keep
making new ones. All right. But they just rearrange and make new products out of them. That's right. Okay. Nothing new. Already it has existed for ages which were before us. How many times you said, caught yourself saying, well, there's nothing new under the sun? And you find, I find myself saying that often. You know, you see behavior repeating. You see news repeating. Storms. Doesn't matter. It's just the same old, same old. It's just different pictures and how it's packaged, all right? And so that leaves you uninspired. Like, I hate this one right here. Groundhog Day was a funny movie. Did that guy have the same problem?
Yes.
Over and over and over until he got it right. Wouldn't life be nice if you had that? But you actually do. Tomorrow's a new day, and you can start living it right. And then the next day, the sun's going to start over where it rose yesterday, and it'll rise up, and you can live right. But out of that, we get been there, done that. You know why I hate that phrase? Because we've been there and done that. We've heard that phrase. Just get rid of it, right? But I don't even know where it started. Was it a movie? It was out of the 80s, or... where did that start? Someone, all of a sudden, everyone started saying that. Been there, done that. Does anyone recall? I'll have to look it up on Google. But I don't know, it's just kind of annoying. same old, here today, gone tomorrow. These are all these types of phrases that we use to describe what he's saying here. It's just, it's the same old, same old. So a couple more things. And then he goes on in verse 11. There's no remembrance of earlier things, also of later things, which will occur. There will be, for them, no remembrance among those who come still later. So what he's saying is what we started with. A generation comes and a generation goes. That the next generation will not remember really what happened here, and they really will care less. And the generation that follows them will not remember what they are doing. Now, you say, well, no, we remember World War II. Roy does, Art does, and Sarah. I'm trying to get the older folks here. All right? Ken? Huh? Bonnie? Eva? Why? They were part of it. Or the generation right past it, they had to live through the Depression. Now, you ask anyone under age 50, tell me about the Depression. It's just this historical thing in the, I don't know, do they even teach about it in history anymore? I don't know. They do?
Yeah.
All right. But do you understand the anxiety, how you suffered, and how people were, the unemployed and the labor, or the camps, and people coming to your back door on the farm and say, hey, can I do some work just because I need some food? Does anyone really appreciate what people went through just to survive? No. Why? Because we didn't, it wasn't our generation, and we really don't care because we have our own battles and our own fights. But they're really nothing, anything new. It's just a different time frame. Yes, Ann?
Well, it becomes academic.
Academic, it does. Now, December 7th, what happened on that day?
Pearl Harbor.
Again, like people don't understand the shock that sent through our nation when we got attacked. And our fleet largely was sunk, our Western fleet. Now, a little more current was 9/11. I remember glued to the TV most of that morning because we were thinking maybe we're having World War III start because we didn't know who attacked us. We didn't know if it was, had no idea what was going to happen. Was that a scary time? Now, that was 2001, and so now it's 2018. So if you're 17 years or older, or if you're even 20, you were just a baby, do those that generation appreciate what that event was like? No. Do they really care? Not really. They didn't have to live through it. That's what he's saying. No one's going to remember because they don't care. Because it's not pertinent. Say, well, that shaped your life. It's the founding forefathers, what they went through just to make this nation what it is. It's who you are because of it. Yeah, that's right, but I really don't care. Do they really care? The majority. And he's saying, huh? That's why they repeat the same mistakes. That's right. But the point I'm trying to say is, I'm not saying they're not important, but in the generation in which people live, they don't care. Because they have their important things they're dealing with, and they trump everything else. Isn't that right? Because how many people have suffered cancer? But when you suffer cancer, it's like it's the first time it's ever happened in the world. Why? Because it's personal to you. It doesn't matter who else did. It's personal to you. It's your life. So we don't care about other people. We care about ourselves. And is that normal? I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just normal. We have to understand that. Oh, yeah.
Washington's home. And it's a big deal. It's a beautiful set, nice to see. But there is an obelisk next to Washington's impressive sepulcher, an obelisk of his nephew that everybody else seemed to pass by. I happened to stop and look at the inscription. It was an inscription, a beautiful inscription, dedicated to a man who lived his life to serve God. But as I stood there, just people, person after person, no one remembers.
That's right. That's right. And even the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., all the names of people that died, it's really touching. But if you look at the names, do you know any of them? No. The only people that know them would be a relative that looks them up, and that might have some meaning to them. And again, a lot of people think, oh, the good old days. You know, do you hear that, the good old days? I miss when man entered space. That was the golden years of our life. Well, you know what happened also? We got bombed back then, and the president got killed. Were they the good old days? They said, well, no, but it's not the first time because what has happened, it always will happen. Lincoln got shot before that. But remember the Oklahoma land rush? No, you don't because you weren't alive. Was that the good old days? If you got there first, what was it? Yours! It was free land. Those were the good old days, weren't they? How about the Spanish flu? And the people that died because of this pandemic? Good old days, there wasn't penicillin like we have today and all the antibiotics. And today is the good old days. The Dow leaps to a record and it's done it. But this is today too. You mentioned that, Brian. I said I'd come back to it. 125 people commit suicide every day in the United States. 7 out of 10 of them are men. They're 4 times more likely than women. But college students seem to lead these statistics. Now, why is suicide on the increase in many aspects? A lot of our veterans from the war committed suicide. There's a lot of factors, and it'd be naive of me to say this is a single factor, so I'd never do that. But there's also overarching this picture, like what's the meaning and purpose of life? Because what leads to depression and despair that causes someone to give up their life? It could be a lot of factors, I understand. It could be crisis in their life. But that's a lack of hope. Because everything's centered and based on what happens right here, right? But if they're looking for something above the sun, no matter what happens here, they're still going to have something hope to hope for, right? And so And as Brian pointed out, our kids, they're not dumb. They've been taught there is no God. We're just evolved creatures. There's no meaning for life. And as Solomon's going to say, what benefit do you have over a dog? Because the dog dies, you die, you're in the same place. You're dead. And they're catching on to that. And so they think, why live? That's what happens. Now, is that new, suicide? No, there's nothing new under the sun. And it's cyclical. It goes up and it goes down. Just like the murder rate. Is murder new? No, it goes up and it goes down. But the answer is, there's no remembrance. And that's going to be you and me. And we'll be fortunate enough if we have our name carved on it, but there's millions of people who die and they're put in a nameless grave and no one knows who they are. They're just stuck there. No remembrance whatsoever. Insignificance. We use that word. Now, let's finish up. We're done. He said, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom. See, I didn't do this haphazardly. It was methodically. And I thought about it, and I used all the wisdom God has given me concerning all that has been done under the heaven. I tried to evaluate it. I tried to weigh it in the balance of significance and importance and purpose. And I tried to come up with something that you could hitch your wagon to, something that is going to give you purpose and meaning in life and fulfillment and bring you some joy so you can overcome the low spots because of these things will pull you through. And what does he say? It's a grievous task, which God has given the sons of men to be afflicted with. I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all. Now, what does all leave out? Is vanity and striving after the wind. Now, this is an interesting statement. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. So if you need 12 donuts to give to Paul, because he paid for 12, and you bring your box over, and there's only 10 in it, and you count them, if you count them 20 times, how many will you still end up with? 10. And you look back and your kid's got chocolate around his lips, you know what happened to the other two. Can you make 12 out of 10? Can you make something that's straight or crooked straight again? He's talking in generalities. What is he saying here? What's he trying to make? Point.
Things that are wrong generally can't be made right.
That's true.
Permanent.
It's permanent. And what's permanent? This statement right here. If you think, oh, I'll change it. I'll show you. I'll find purpose in life. I'll be different. I can do this. I can blaze my own way and find my own path in life, my own truth, and I'll show you all wrong. It says, no. No. You can't make 12 out of 10. It's just not possible. And that's what he's trying to impress upon us. This applies to who? Everybody. He's made the test. What is. Carl Gustav Jung, he was a psychiatrist. And for whatever you think about him, this is an interesting quote you have to just consider. About a third of my cases, this is back in the 1960s, 50s, 61 is when he died. My cases are suffering from no clinical definable neurosis, but from the senselessness and emptiness of their lives. A third of his cases. This can be defined as the general neurosis of our time. And what is it? Meaningless. And that's why they're having mental issues, because they can find no real purpose for life. That's scary, isn't it? And then we go on. Solomon adds to this. He says, I said to myself, I magnified increased wisdom more than all were over Jerusalem before me. My mind observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. I've seen it all, is what he says. And I set my mind to know wisdom and madness and folly. And I realized this is striving after the wind. And here it is. Because in much wisdom, there is much grief. And increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. You know what he's saying? The more you realize what he's saying, the more grievous life gets on this earth. Because you realize one thing, what? It is worthless. And for some benefit, he's going to say, the fool's got it made, because he has no idea that life is worthless. That's what he's going to say later. But it's better to be wise than a fool. He said, don't go that route either. But they do have something. You don't know what you don't know. He said, the more I've learned, the more grievous I see it is. And so the answer is, right here, and we're done. He says, well, what are we going to do? Look above the sun, because real life is going to be found living in the sun. S-O-N. Right? That's our conclusion we always want to go to. Fear God and keep his commandments. All right, thank you.